The next case on our calendar is 07-1311, Jane Doe et al. Versus Massillon City School District. Mr. Wilson.
Good morning. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Brian Wilson, and I, along with my co-counsel Don Benson, are privileged to represent children in this case. During the course of my argument, I will be using the term school district and political subdivision interchangeably, since I found myself doing that, and just so you know for clarification. I'd also like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. I believe this case is a shining example of the maxim that no law is settled until it is settled right. If the Fifth District and the trial court are upheld in this case, there will be two unfortunate byproducts of that decision. Number one is that school districts will enjoy blanket 100% immunity when school personnel molest school children as long as they occur off the property. It's what I refer to as immunity by location.
Mr. Wilson, let me start you with a question. Your arguments in your briefs seem to be policy arguments that could be addressed by the General Assembly. This case maybe sort of cries out for some change in the law, but it seems to me that your argument would require us to change the law, just to read the statute differently than it's been written.
I would answer that, Mr. Chief Justice, by saying that I think the answer to the question starts and ends with Hubbard. And it also
with
Hubbard, the Hubbard decision.
Yeah, right, Hubbard.
And that it ends with the idea that no statute, no matter how clear, no matter how unclear, no matter how murky, whatever the case may be, should be interpreted to produce an absurd result. I think it starts with Hubbard because Hubbard established three bedrock rules. Number one, the B4 exception to immunity was not limited to physical defects. Number two, it wasn't even limited to the quote-unquote negligent use of the building. And number three, there was no immunity for schools. If they negligently hire or retain malevolent personnel who molest or injure students. That is the essence of Hubbard. Now, it is true that Hubbard involved a situation where the students were molested on school property. But I think the question needs to be asked. If the facts of Hubbard were different, if those two children molested by the teacher in that case were molested 1 foot off of school property, would the syllabus of Hubbard had said, there is an exception to immunity, however, we're going to reinsert immunity because it did not happen on school property? I think that the spirit of Hubbard is such that it would not have come to that conclusion. And at page 455, the court said, since the injuries were caused by the negligence occurring on school grounds, the exception applies. So now we know that Hubbard was revisited again in the Sherwin-Williams case. And I guess two questions flow from that case. Number one, does the Sherwin-Williams decision add clarity to the B4 exception? And if it does, is it the final word on the scope of the B4 immunity exception? As I read, of course, we know that the Sherwin-Williams decision involved the B3 exception to immunity, the nuisance exception. And the court looked to B4 for guidance. As I read the Sherwin-Williams decision, it seemed to both giveth and taketh away all in the same stroke of a pen. And what I mean by that is both Hubbard and Sherwin-Williams expanded the immunity exceptions. And Sherwin-Williams did not shackle the B3 exception with the requirement that the injury occur on the grounds of the political subdivision.
But isn't the problem that B3 speaks to nuisance and B4 speaks to negligence?
Yes. I mean,
the General Assembly distinguished the two separate, as you know, two separate subdivisions.
That is true, but was it the legislature's intent to create a line of demarcation? Two theories of liability, very similar, distinct but similar, where as the result of Sherwin-Williams, we have under B3, the location of injury is legally irrelevant. Under B4, the location of injury is the only thing that matters.
So you're just asking then for us to interpret on the grounds as a very broad, expansive view, and anything relating to school activity is encompassed by the terminology on the grounds.
I think that Hubbard, again, is the key, that the key is the negligence that occurs on school property. I think that is the standard. I think that that makes sense in terms of the text of the statute, and I believe that to interpret it, to require the injury to occur on school property, leads to an absurdity of results. I don't wish to rehash all the facts in this case, but I consider them, in my humble opinion, to be rather egregious. If we set aside the criminal background check issue, okay, let's just set that aside for a second. This was a man who was given access, custody, and control to children as young as 6 years old on a regular basis to teach them at the school chess. This meandered into a club of sorts. This man was given the label coach, advisor. He was in the school yearbook. He was in the school newsletters. The elementary school promoted this club. I have to ask, what due diligence was done? They knew very little about him. And there was no...
There's no question he was not an employee, was he? He was a volunteer.
He was a volunteer, but I think if you read the section of the immunity statute dealing with who's an employee, it refers to people who are paid, unpaid, full-time, or part-time. So I think for purposes of the immunity statute, he would be considered an employee. But I guess my point is, we can ratchet up the absurdity from this case quite easily. Let's change the facts. Let's suppose this man was not a volunteer. Let's suppose he was a teacher and the school just didn't do a background check. They forgot. Or they negligently failed to do a background check. Or they found out that this teacher was in fact a child molester and destroyed the evidence of it. We have evidence in this case that a school file on this club was destroyed. So it's not out of the realm of the hypothetical. Even under those circumstances, a mandatory duty by the schools that's failed, if all that matters legally is where this child was molested, I believe that that is a shining example of the absurdity, the canon of construction that says that no statute should be interpreted to yield an absurd result. Thankfully, that's not a maxim that this court has to apply frequently. But I liken it to the rather large paddle that my principal had at my high school in the 70s, back when this was permitted. It wasn't used very often, but when it was used, it was very well deserved. And that's what I think this canon of construction that shows the history of that, and it needs to be applied in this case. The other section of immunity is what I refer to immunity by accident. And that involves the governmental proprietary distinction. Keep in mind, when we filed this lawsuit, we had no idea whether this club was a true club, unofficial, whatever. The newsletters that are part of this record and the yearbooks were produced by us. So when we filed our lawsuit and we alleged all exceptions to immunity, the answer we got was Smith. Smith who? He's a mere user of space. That's all he did. He had absolutely no connection to this school. No legal status, anything. Two things became indisputable. That the idea of giving space to this man meandered into an unofficial, what I call a de facto chess club, for all the reasons I explained. And he was an admitted volunteer. They deny it in this litigation, but the superintendent and the principal admitted he was a volunteer. We also know it was undisputable that this club had to have been, by board policy, approved by the Board of Education. It was not approved, it was not sponsored. They didn't even know about the existence of this chess club. So the question becomes, are appellees entitled to government function status for a club or a program that violated their own policy and that they didn't even know about? I think that the Green case is instructive. And the essence of that case is that not just because there's an educational component to a program, the Agricultural Society in that case, does not necessarily imbue it with government function status. But I would submit to the court that this case, the facts of this case, are stronger than the Green case. Because the Green case at least involved an organized, planned activity of the political subdivision. We don't have that here. Because there was absolutely no approval of the activity. And I think
In your expansive reading of the statute, how should we consider the fact that part of the molestation occurred on a fishing trip, unrelated to the chess club, unrelated to the school, sort of a follow-up to the relationship that developed
right.
as a result of the association that may have begun at the school.
Right.
And then I guess the follow-up question is there any limit on it once you can show a core or an origin emanating from a school-related relationship?
Justice O'Donnell, I would answer that question by, we already have principles in place for that, and it's called principles of foreseeability.
Can't hear you.
We already have principles in place for that. It's the principle of foreseeability embodied in negligence law. What I mean by that is we have children who are introduced to this man. Ground zero for the building of trust, in this case, was the school. They would have never known him but for their allowing him to start this program.
The point is, I don't know that we have a lot of high school teachers or guidance counselors off on tangents of their own with school children on weekends for activities unrelated to extracurricular activities sponsored by the school or academic activities. These were well beyond any relationship to a school activity, at least in the one instance.
Yes, some of them were, and some of them weren't.
So
I think
for
the
those
field
that
trip,
aren't, I'm asking, what is the demarcation line?
To answer your question, the field trip certainly was the polar opposite of these unrelated things about fishing and things like that, because that was the school guidance counselor attended this, and he was in the room alone with these children in a motel room. So, but throwing all that into the mix, I think that the principle of foreseeability, and my time is up, so I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. To answer your question, the risk to be perceived defines the duty to be obeyed. That is a hallmark principle of foreseeability, and you have to ask, is it foreseeable that a convicted child molester, if not discovered, if reasonable measures aren't taken, who builds the trust of school children under the rubric of a program promoted by the school, would he strike again? And I think that's the standard, and it's a liability standard as opposed to an immunity standard. I did not get a chance to address the willful or wanton. I
have to do your best in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Ms. Danofsky.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm Nicole Danofsky, representing FLV Massillon City School District Board of Education, along with Mr. Ross. Your Honors, we do not dispute that the molestation of children is a tragedy. We don't want that to happen. However, that is not the issue in this case. The issue before this court, at least the primary issue, is a very narrow one, and it's the significance of the word "and." The issue is whether an injury must occur on the grounds of a political subdivision for the exception to immunity stated in 2744.02b4 to apply. We submit that the B4 exception, as held in Hubbard, is unambiguous. Applying the rules of grammar and common usage, the plain and ordinary meaning of the statute requires that the injury occur on the grounds of the political subdivision.
Or used in connection with the performance of a governmental grounds or building. If the chess club here had rented a hall someplace to have a chess tournament, and it's the same folks, it's a volunteer group and not the school, it's not a school organized group, and the molestation had occurred there in that building, would B4 apply?
I'm sorry, if the school had rented the facility
the organization, take the same facts, except the chess club, the volunteer group, had rented a building and to have a chess tournament. Is that a building used in connection with the performance of governmental function?
I would suggest that it is, Your Honor.
That it is?
That it is. If you look at the exceptions, or I'm sorry, the governmental functions.
So there would be liability then?
Listed in, correct. The governmental functions listed in 2744.01c, you will notice that in E, the regulation and use of public grounds is a governmental function. So if you take that, accept appellant's position, then there could be liability for political subdivisions anytime you allow the use or rental of a public building and a relationship between.
No, it's my facts are that it's a private building, but it's used for the purpose that I suggested. It's a private building. I guess we agree that this is a governmental function in which the students were engaged in the sort of monitoring or whatever the role of the school board here was, a governmental function to permit the use of the buildings, of their buildings.
Right.
And have some oversight of it.
Right.
So my question is, what does that word used mean? Does it mean that the buildings have to be owned by the school board?
I don't believe so. I believe it could be used. If a school district needs additional space, for example, if their auditorium isn't large enough for a function and they do rent another facility, Vets Memorial for graduation ceremonies or something like that, I believe that there could be liability under that exception.
I think the improper conduct here occurred in a car, as I recall, and the facts don't fit my hypothetical, I don't think, in this
right.
case.
Right, you have a gas station, a motel room in a car. So no, you don't have a situation where the school district used or had control over those facilities or those
Council,
locations.
Does it make a difference that this was a volunteer and that it was the chess club wasn't a recognized club as such. Let me put it this way. Say, for example, there was a field trip or a teacher organized on Earth Day taking a bunch of kids out to clean up a highway or a stream bed and put them in a perilous situation off the school grounds, but clearly a school function directed by a school employee, and that school employee does something that would be possibly deemed negligent, arguable whether it's negligent. You know, that's always, once you get past immunity here, you still have the whole host of tort issues as to whether or not there's a good claim. But just dealing with the immunity situation, if it's an organized function of the school off the school grounds on other property but directed by school employees, immunity or not?
Not under the B4 exception, unless it's facilities used, grounds used by the political subdivision. I mean, that.
So you're saying there would be immunity?
There could be immunity. You would have to analyze whether the location or grounds used by the political subdivision or not. I mean, arguably, there could be an exception, given it's a very fact-intensive consideration.
It's a hayride, and so it's a moving location off the school grounds, mm-hmm. but there's something inappropriate that the teacher permits to happen or directs to happen.
Right.
Is that immune because of location? What I'm trying to focus on is location the be all and end all here in this case?
It's location is in this context the be all and end all because the location wasn't being used by the school facility. If it is a hayride, if it is a school-sponsored field trip, and the location, the grounds and buildings are being used by the school district, then this exception to immunity could apply.
So what becomes important here is then that it's a volunteer organization, not a school-recognized organization, and it's a volunteer person, not under the direction of the school. And you would draw the line saying the stuff in the school newspaper or the promotion of it was just, we do a lot of that, and that doesn't make it a school function. So it's, the real cut comes because it's not a school function rather than where it happened in terms of immunity.
I think those issues are important, but I think they are relevant when it comes to analyzing negligence, what his capacity is. I think in terms of immunity, that last phrase, as we were just discussing, that are used in connection with the performance of a governmental function is important. So the location, because the school wasn't using the gas station or the motel room for a function, that becomes the relevant point of inquiry when it comes to location in terms of immunity. When you look at...
But if it was a senior trip, which I don't think they do anymore, but I'm old enough they did when I was a young man, and you're in a hotel room in New York City or wherever, that would... The location wouldn't provide the immunity if it was an organized, chaperoned school trip.
I agree. As 2744 B4 was written.
So then the connections to the school by this perpetrator do become important in determining immunity or not.
They become relevant. No. They don't, because what you'd be looking at is the governmental function aspect and the location. It is really the location and how the location is being used. If you look at the relationship that the school district had or didn't have with Mr. Smith and the status of the chess club, that becomes a negligence issue, both from a foreseeability standpoint and a duty standpoint. School districts in Ohio are required to conduct background checks under 33.19.39 on all employees and appointees of the district. Mr. Smith was not either of those. On appellant's best day, he could loosely be construed to be a volunteer. He was unpaid. He was doing something at the school, though we contend that it wasn't for the school's benefit. With respect to volunteers, beginning in 2001, a school district had discretion whether or not to conduct a background check on volunteers under revised code 109.575. The fact of the matter is, at that point in time, in 96, 97, many school districts were not conducting background checks on volunteers, and I would contend that many still are not doing that today. It's a matter of expense for a lot of school districts.
Nonetheless, you maintain that this is a governmental function, do you not?
It depends how you describe it. The leasing or regulation.
Well, the relationship of this individual and the operation of the chess club in connection with the administration sponsorship of it has to fall into one of two categories, either governmental or proprietary. Which do you propose that it is?
Well, it was never established that the chess club was sponsored by the board. Actually, the opposite is true. However, generally, school districts, when immunity is analyzed, you fall under the general governmental function of operating a public school. Mr. Wilson did not raise this issue in either the trial court or court of appeals. Had we been given the opportunity to analyze it there or during the course of discovery.
What is your view of what the relationship is?
It would be the regulation of buildings, which is a governmental function under 2744-01-CE.
So the conduct of the instruction of the chess club is a governmental function in your view?
The provision, either way you look at it, whether it's providing space to a community chess club, yes, or if you view it as an extracurricular activity, yes, they would both be governmental functions.
Okay. The question of whether an employee or a volunteer can be an employee for purposes of the immunity statute. Under the definitional section under 01B, would you concede that a volunteer, if the volunteer is authorized to act within the scope of the employment of the political subdivision, could fall within that category?
For purposes of the immunity statute, immunity analysis, yes, I agree. Okay. For purposes of whether or not a background check must be conducted mm-hmm. under 3319.39, I would not agree.
Okay.
Just briefly touching also on the issue of the proprietary function versus the governmental function, this court has indicated in 1997 in Quattro Mining versus Foreman that it is inappropriate, or in appellate courts do not consider issues not presented to the court whose judgment is sought to be reserved. And there are deep public policy concerns supporting that position. The court stated, these rules are deeply embedded in a just regard to the fair administration of justice, designed to afford the opposing party a meaningful opportunity to respond. They do not permit a party to sit idly by until he or she loses one ground, only to fail himself of another on appeal. And we would submit that that's what appellants have done in this case. They lost the immunity argument relating to the before exception. Now they want to come back and revisit whether there could be liability and the exception to immunity would apply under B2. We believe this court spoke clearly on the issue of the application of B4 in the Sherwin-Williams case at paragraph 17. The court couldn't have been more clear. The court indicated former B4 demonstrates that the General Assembly is perfectly capable of limiting the reach of a political subdivision's liability to injuries or losses that occur on property within the political subdivision. Your Honors, we would submit to you that that paragraph in Sherwin-Williams is the appropriate principle that should be applied in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Danofsky. Mr. Wilson, you saved just a little more than a minute of your time.
Thank you. I would like to briefly address the issue that we didn't preserve the issue. We pled all exceptions to immunity. 2 years of discovery was devoted to this gentleman's status and who he was and what he was. The trial court found that they were engaged in a governmental function. We briefed the issue. We distinctly said in every brief, you can't have it both ways here. If this teacher, if this volunteer was a virtual stranger to you for which you just gave him space, how can you claim governmental status for someone like that? If there's absolutely no connection to the school, as you say. So, which raised the issue of whether or not it was a governmental function. And I would just point out, as a final note on that matter, this court on two historic occasions has issued rules of law where the issues presented were not even briefed, much less preserved below. And I'm referring to the Gladys decision and the Dardinger case, where the court created the constructive trust on the punitive damages. So I think that rule is subject to relaxation. I did not get a chance to address the willful and wanton. I believe I will say this. The only evidence we did not have below was an admission by Smith that he was a previously convicted child molester. And I think the quantum of proof that we established certainly raises an issue of whether or not there's a jury question on the issue of willful.
So you briefed that argument, and we've read your brief, so
okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.